This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Our show originates from the Investar Tower building in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757, and emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. We start with Patrick T. Brown. He's a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. His work focuses on developing what is termed a robust pro-family economic agenda and supporting families at the cornerstone of a healthy and flourishing society. And his work has appeared in many places, including most recently at the New York Times. An op-ed piece that Patrick T. Brown wrote starts this way: "I am far from the only young conservative whose interest in politics was sparked by the issue of abortion. In high school and college, we would stake out early morning spots on the National Mall for the annual March for Life, write postcards to our elected officials, and pray rosaries outside abortion clinics. Along the way, many of us found ourselves in the Republican Party, often picking up other conservative causes along the way: low taxes, limited government, strong defense, border security. The bundle of preferences could be a bit ungainly at times, but we found progressive voices quick to shout down attempts for pro-lifers to work with Democrats, so the GOP became home. It's hard to feel that way now," continues Patrick T. Brown. "While traditional social conservatives and the Republican Party might be allies on some key issues, it appears that it is no longer just one political party that wants to shelve our convictions in the name of political expediency. It is both." Patrick T. Brown is referring to the former president, Donald John Trump, who provided three pro-life justices to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that, of course, led to the undoing of Roe v. Wade. But now Trump is against, at least he says, a national ban on abortion, and he is saying that states have the right to do whatever they want to do, and most of the states in the country, as far as population, have a pro-choice mentality. When you add up California and New York, you're obviously going to get a big head start on the national population. Now, the entire South is almost without abortion rights, including Louisiana, and that is because of this Supreme Court and really because of the appointments, the nominations made by former President Trump. But Patrick T. Brown, graduate of Notre Dame with a degree in political science and economics, master's from Princeton. He is a fellow who has a wife and four children. He lives in Columbia, South Carolina, and he's not happy with former President Donald John Trump. Good morning, Patrick.
Thanks. Good morning from here in Columbia.
Well, it's nice to talk to a fellow in a fellow SEC state, and you're right.
That's
in the
right.
Heart of Southeastern Conference country in Columbia, South Carolina. Well, tell us why you're chagrined with former President Trump.
Well, where to start? I mean, the relationship between the pro-life movement and President Trump during his first term in office, or, you know, potentially for his first term in office, was always a transactional one. I don't think anybody thought that Donald Trump, the thrice-married real estate billionaire from New York City, really cared all that deeply about the pro-life cause. I think that was pretty evident. But he made a deal. He said, if you vote for me, I'll appoint Supreme Court justices who will adhere to a originalist understanding of the Constitution. And under that framework, Roe versus Wade is seen as something that's an impermissible, you know, application of the Constitution. And we got those justices. And so, I'm, you know, obviously have to be grateful for that. But I think Trump's influence on the party, because he is somebody who sees that bargain as having been completed and, you know, he's ready to move on. Ever since then, he's blamed pro-lifers for the subpar 2022 midterm results. He sandbagged states trying to pass laws that protect unborn life, such as Florida, calling it a terrible thing that the state had passed a six-week abortion ban. And the most recent example is his personal interference in the rewriting of the GOP platform to remove references to the belief that, you know, human life is sacred and that we should encourage pro-life legislation across the board. And, you know, I think, obviously, as you mentioned in the intro, there's not a lot of home for pro-lifers in the Democratic Party, although Louisiana is perhaps one state in which that's still possible. In the rest of the country, it's pretty clear pro-lifers only have one party willing to listen to their concerns. And my concern is that President Trump's influence on the party is going to continue to push social conservative priorities to the backseat.
Well, Donald Trump is all about winning. And I think most Democrats feel this is an issue that is working for them. And most Republicans feel it's an issue that's not working for them. So based on the fact that you can't do anything unless you get elected, does Trump have a point?
Yes and no. It's certainly true. And I have no shortage of articles that I've been complaining about, you know, even before Dobbs, saying elected Republican strategy on abortion can't just be to try to change the subject and talk about the border or inflation or the fact that, you know, oh, well, you know, we all know Democrats are the real extremist on this because, you know, it's 1-2% of abortions take place in what we would consider late term abortions. And that's what Republicans always like to talk about because those are the really difficult cases. But at least a lot of other, you know, 98-97% of other abortion procedures untouched if you're only focusing on that. So there's clearly a need for the Republican Party to get better at talking about, you know, issues of reproductive health and reproductive justice and all that kind of stuff, starting with more support for pregnant moms when they're carrying the child. But also, you know, it would be great to see more Republicans in favor of expanding the child tax credit or being creative with expanding choices in early childhood and child care, all that kind of stuff. But that's not the sort of moderation that we're seeing from President Trump and those who are sort of allied with him in the more MAGA camps of the GOP. They are much more concerned about, you know, every political party has a store of political capital, and you can either use it to defend unpopular things like abortion stances that are outside of the mainstream, or you can use it to defend things that, you know, we could talk about the 2020 election or January 6th any of the other, you know, unpopular things that are associated with President Trump.
Evangelicals, for the most part, conservative ones, support the former president, and some people even revere him. Now, do you think you can trust him?
No, I don't think he's a transactional figure. If you make a deal with him, I think, you know, he sees that deal as having been completed. And I think it's incumbent on pro-lifers to say, look, you know, we need a new deal at the very least. If you can't take us for granted. And, you know, again, it's important for us to go into this clear-eyed and not continue to tell ourselves that the Republican Party is just as pro-life as it's ever been, because it's not.
877-217-5757 for Patrick T. Brown, who'll be with us for a little bit longer. Now, Robin Dow, our producer, has pulled some statements from former President Trump on abortion, and he's been all over the map on this issue. When he was a Democrat, of course, his opinion was much different. And in his personal life, he has bypassed the opportunity to say that he has never participated in an abortion, as far as I would presume taking care of matters for someone close to him. But here is Donald Trump on abortion through the years.
I'm very pro-choice. I hate the concept of abortion. I hate it. I hate everything it stands for. I cringe when I listen to people debating the subject. But I just believe in choice.
But I'm pro-life.
You're pro-life, but you do think that there should be exceptions for rape and incest.
Yes, and life, you know, the health of the mother, the death.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion, yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
We got it back to the states. We did the Roe v. Wade thing, which they've been trying to get it done for 50 years. I got it done.
I believe in the three exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. I believe in that. Without the exceptions, it is very difficult to win elections.
Going to
would
come
you
together.
Sign federal legislation there that would ban abortion at 15 weeks?
No, let me just tell you what I do. I'm going to come together with all groups, and we're going to have something that's acceptable. I mean, DeSantis is willing to sign a 5-week and 6-week ban.
Would you support that?
I think what he did is a terrible thing and a terrible mistake.
All right, that's Donald Trump. Now, Patrick, when you hear that, Trump is a moving target, isn't he?
Yeah, that's definitely true. And again, that's not any surprise to anybody who's followed him over the years. It's you know, there's books to be written about why he became the face of the conservative movement, and that's a conversation we can have another time. But again, it's important for, you know, evangelicals, Catholics, others who are, you know, committed to the pro-life cause to recognize that this guy is somebody who will take whatever position is politically convenient. And now he's right about things like exceptions for the rape, for the life of the mother, rape and incest. These are very politically popular, and as a matter of prudence, I think it's important for pro-lifers to support them. But at the same time, he's willing to say anything and do anything to win elections, and that's a very different approach to politics than having a principled stand on something that's as important as when life begins and how we should protect it.
Patrick T. Brown will be with us for a few more moments. His number is 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Patrick T. Brown, if you've heard this man in our first segment, you can tell he is a sincere person with a mind that is fertile, and he is a conservative with a degree in political science and economics from Notre Dame and a master's from Princeton from the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs. He is married to his wife, Jessica. They have four children and live in the southern hamlet, capital of South Carolina, Columbia. And he is not happy with former President Trump, who has bounced from place to place on the abortion issue, and now is, for all purposes, in places like California and New York, Trump is pro-choice, and in places like Louisiana, he's pro-life. Whatever the people in a state want, Trump says that's the way he wants to go on this issue. And of course, he's looking at polls, and polls indicate this is an issue that has not worked well for Republicans since the undoing of Roe v. Wade. Now, Patrick T. Brown, a listener, asked a good question before we take a call or two. Would you vote for Harris or somebody else instead of Trump, or does he still have your vote regardless of how he has danced and weaved on abortion?
I haven't decided yet. I've never voted for President Trump in his two races yet, and we'll see how things go in November. I think there's, you know, as you mentioned in your, you know, build up there, you know, certainly Trump is A-okay with the laws that are passed in California and New York. And, you know, to the extent he said anything, he's not been okay with the pro-life laws that have been passed in states like Louisiana and Mississippi and other places across the country. And so it's this sort of fair weather federalism that really concerns me, because if that becomes the new standard for, you know, the Republican Party nominee, then all the work that pro-lifers put in over the last half century to get to this point is at real risk. And so that's where that, you know, he certainly has not won my vote at this point.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Patrick T. Brown. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Yeah, Mr. Brown, given the popularity of a woman's right to choose and doctors not wanting to jeopardize their careers, is standing on principle, as you say, worth losing an election?
Yeah, I'm willing to bite that bullet, but it's not, that's a false choice, right? We know that scores of politicians, even ones who voted for pretty aggressive pro-life legislation or signed them into law, in the case of Governor DeSantis, Governor Kemp in Georgia, Governor Abbott in Texas, Governor Mike DeWine in Ohio, a very purple state, or a, you know, purplish red state, they all signed abortion bans and went on to win re-election. And so it's not the case that voters will automatically tune out anybody who has sincere pro-life convictions. You just need to be able to talk about it in a way that recognizes the concerns that people have. They, again, when a mother's life is in danger, or in these horrific edge cases of rape and incest, which make up a very small fraction of the number of abortions performed overall, you can address those concerns. You can invest in social safety net programs, all that kind of things, while still standing on principle and saying, we believe that the unborn life is worthy of protection. That's not what President Trump is doing, and that's what concerns me.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Patrick T. Brown. His conservative credentials are evident with his work at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and recently he penned an editorial in the New York Times saying that Donald Trump has let down conservatives on abortion. Now, Trump did give us three justices on the court who provided the majority necessary to overturn Roe v. Wade, but he now is saying, look, if you're in a state that wants abortion rights, you can pretty much do whatever you want, and that's not good enough for Patrick and some conservatives. Jim on I-10, please be concise. You're on with Patrick. Hi, Jim.
Morning. So my question is this. Are you sure that it's the politician's ability to explain their convictions in a way that convinces voters, or just gerrymandering?
All right. That's a broader topic. But, Patrick, I know you follow politics. There are all kinds of elements at play. And gerrymandering is one of them. And it's done by both sides. But the Republicans seem to be winning the game.
Yeah, although their edge in that category has weakened in recent years as the parties continue to realign along educational lines. But the point is, state lines aren't gerrymandered, right? So everybody's voting for governor or for senator. And the fact that pro-life, you know, again, sincere, committed pro-life politicians who have signed aggressive laws, you know, in some cases banning abortion or limiting it to the very first weeks of gestation, they've signed those laws and gone on to re-election in a very tumultuous post-Dobbs environment in 2022. So it's not just gerrymandering. It's the fact that you can be sincere and voters want to know where you stand. It's not an automatic strikeout, right? You can explain it if you're principled and committed about it. But Trump is not principled and not committed to it. And so he's willing to just say whatever comes to mind and offer the sort of word salad that we've come to associate with him.
877-217-5757 for Patrick T. Brown in our remaining moments with him. And Mark Ballard is on deck. John in South Baton Rouge. Hello, John. You're on with Patrick.
Patrick, good morning.
Hey.
Hey, Patrick, I am as conservative as you are. And I want to tell you, that's what I want, is the states deciding. You have an unwinnable issue here on the national level. Do you realize that? And you're asking Trump to fall on the sword rather than let the states decide.
All right.
No, I don't think so. I think there's a way to say, as my former governor, UN Ambassador Nikki Haley did in her run for the Republican nomination, to say, look, let's not talk about a national ban right now. It is not in the cards. We don't have, in order to pass any sort of legislation like that, you would need 60 Republicans in the U.S. Senate, and there's no chance we'll have that anytime soon, even with very favorable maps coming up. So, you know, any talk of a national abortion ban, I think, is at best counterproductive, and at worst, you know, is just pie in the sky. I'm not asking President Trump to commit to any sort of national ban. I don't think it's appropriate, but I am asking him to talk about these state laws at the very least in a way that supports the pro-life cause. You know, there's amendments on the ballot in states like Missouri, North Dakota, Florida, Arizona. These are hotly contested issues, and having a strong champion saying, you know, I support pro-life legislation at the state level could really make a difference. He doesn't want to do that. He's also not willing to talk about some of the Biden administration's expansive steps on promoting abortion at the federal level, whether that's through the Department of Defense or some of these other regulations that they've really tried to interpret creatively to expand abortion access through different federal programs. That's something that a conservative administration should tackle, but President Trump is willing to turn the other way and turn the blind eye.
James in Metairie. Hello, James. You're on with Patrick. Hi, James.
Well, good morning to you, Jim. Two absurdities this morning. Trump, a de facto rapist and adulterer, telling the American people that women who have abortions should be punished. The other is this, that human embryos are children, a total absurdity that shows the extremist of anti-abortion zealots. It makes IVF not feasible.
All right. Well, James is not pleased with former President Trump, but as I've stated, most conservatives are, but there are people like Patrick, and I guess the question is, does that send you somewhere else to vote? And you say you've not voted for him, but there are others who probably will vote for him with less enthusiasm based on his switcheroo on abortion, Patrick.
Well, yeah, I mean, hey, if there's Democrats out there, your state senator, Katrina Edwards, is a great example of a Democrat who's worked across the aisle to increase support for moms. Obviously, former Governor Edwards is another example. These you know, pro-life Democrats are unfortunately a rare breed. But if the Harris administration or anybody else wants to work across the aisle to address the concerns of, you know, pro-lifers like me, I would love to see it, you know, come over and woo me. In response to the caller, I think, you know, this is an example of why Trump tries to fumble with this language and comes out for supporting, you know, punishing women who are looking for to get an abortion, which is something that virtually no committed pro-lifer would ever agree to.
Okay, Patrick, you've been a good guest. Let's do it again if you're a game, and I bet you are. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard making his weekly guest appearance from the Beltway in Washington, and he's a man who covers politics for The Advocate and Picayune, and much of the attention is on what's happening nationally with an election 96 days away. And Joe Biden just got out of the race 11 days ago. And in that span, and I'm looking at Real Clear Politics, and the betting averages now, Donald Trump, in the first survey, he was a 30-point favorite over Kamala Harris to win the presidency on November 5th. 30 points ahead. As of today, 11 days later, it's Trump 51, Harris 43. It's gone down to 8 points. Harris will name her running mate. Now, she has pulled ahead of Trump in Michigan. She's 2 points ahead. She's down by 0.2% in Wisconsin and down by 2.7% in Pennsylvania. And Josh Shapiro is the governor of Pennsylvania, extremely popular, most popular politician in the state of Pennsylvania right now. It would probably be the case that if he were put on the ticket, he could get her Pennsylvania. And if she gets Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, she most likely will be the 47th president. But that's easier said than done. And Mark Kelly of Arizona is still a possibility with a resume that's lights out. Best resume of anybody, I think, who've ever run for any office in America. But can he bring her Arizona? That's questionable. And that's all about winning in those states with the Electoral College as is. Now, in those states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, there are many cities that have large African-American populations. And yesterday in Chicago, Donald Trump, who had the brass to go talk before the National Black Journalists Convention, he questioned Vice President Harris's identity as a black woman, and it's something that makes you wonder what he was trying to do, but maybe he was playing to his base. But at any rate, this is not akin to what Bill Clinton did when he addressed the Rainbow Coalition in 1992 and took on Sister Souljah. Sister Souljah was an outlier even within the ranks of the Rainbow Coalition, but it's Vice President Kamala Harris, who has never, to my knowledge, ever made any secret of her ethnicity. But here is Donald Trump at that convention.
Do you believe that Vice President Kamala Harris is only on the ticket because she is a black woman?
Well, I can say no. I think it's maybe a little bit different. So I've known her a long time indirectly, not directly very much. And she was always of Indian heritage, and she was only promoting Indian heritage. I didn't know she was black until a number of years ago when she happened to turn black, and now she wants to be known as black. So I don't know, is she Indian or is she black?
She has always identified as a black woman.
I respect either one. I respect either one, but she obviously doesn't, because she was Indian all the way, and then all of a sudden she made a turn and she became a black person.
Just to be clear, sir, do you believe that she is?
I think somebody should look into that too when you ask continue in a very hostile, nasty tone.
It's a direct question, sir. Do you believe that Vice President Kamala Harris is a DEI hire, as some Republicans
have said?
I really don't know.
Could be.
All right. That was Donald Trump in Chicago at the National Black Journalist Convention. So, Mark Ballard, every day is an adventure with the former president, and the last 11 days have not been good for him. He's still ahead, but he's like a team in a pennant race with a big lead, and it's slipping away unless something changes, and he decided this was a way to change the inertia, the momentum. I don't know if that's going to work, but we never know what Donald Trump will do next, do we?
No, and I'm not sure that I would have played it that way, but, you know, he's won an election for president, so he's not going to listen to me on that. But that did seem – this entire summer has been just crazy with the politics, and it's going back and forth. And, I mean, I think that we saw that the vice president was way behind, and then it was expected because I think there is a honeymoon type of period in which she kind of jumped up. And I guess what we're going to see is events like the one that President Trump was involved with yesterday are going to make the decision. Let's see how that goes in the next, 98 days before we have an election.
Well, Trump told his audience yesterday that he had been America's best president for the black population since Abraham Lincoln. And he took on Rachel Scott of ABC, called her nasty and rude. Over the weekend, he called Kamala Harris a bum and a low IQ individual. And she has more degrees than he. She's a lawyer. He's not. He's never released his transcript from Penn after questioning President Obama for not releasing his transcript. But Trump, by the way, went to Fordham for a couple of years before he transferred to Penn. And as we know, he had connections that probably got him into the best business school in America. And he did graduate from the Wharton School, albeit as an undergraduate, not as an MBA. But I don't think anybody questions the fact that Trump is a smart man. But sometimes he doesn't say smart things, and he's cunning. He has to, in his mind, somewhere in that mind of his, think that this is working for him. And it may be working with a segment of the population, but it's the kind of segment that most of us would not want to be associated with, Mark.
I would say so. I mean, it was, but he has always made great inroads by saying outrageous things. And then if we find, I'm not altogether sure that he thought through what he was saying yesterday, but it's certainly, at least looking at the Twitter traffic on there, the social media traffic, is that it seemed to resonate with his base. If it did not really expand his other voters, I mean, he was hoping to expand into the black community. I'm not sure that that really worked.
Well, the New York Times says after the event, the former president seemed to see some political value in the controversy it created. The attack on Kamala Harris's racial identity has been percolating in right-wing circles. This is the New York Times account. And among the former president's supporters, and to the high-profile interview, he thrust it into the mainstream. And here's his quote, "Crazy Kamala is saying she's Indian, not black," he wrote on his social media platform. "She uses everybody, including her racial identity." That from Donald John Trump. 877-217-5757, Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, so I got a question. What is it with San Francisco politics? It seems like it has control of the Democrat Party. You can trace it back to Jim Jones, his support for Willie Brown.
Jim Jones?
Jim Jones. The Kool-Aid drinkers come out of San Francisco, and they control everything. Kamala Harris was Willie Brown was her sugar daddy. I mean,
well, all right, that's enough of that. But San Francisco also produced Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Jerry Brown, Gavin Newsom, Nancy Pelosi. It's It's a place that's produced many fine politicians, and a congressman, Leo Ryan, from that area was killed in Guyana when Jim Jones, the noted Jim Jones, got everyone in his orbit to drink Kool-Aid. And Jones, by the way, was not from San Francisco. He was from Indiana, a red state the last time I checked, Patrick. He was from Indiana, not San Francisco. Pat,
I think, you know, if you're looking at all of that, that's all kind of a side issue that's kind of to raise, excitement and energizing and everything. But if Patrick and the Republicans really believe in states' rights, which they say they do, which Donald Trump says they do, then doesn't San Francisco have the right to elect its own politicians and elect them? Not elect what they want to see, not just what Patrick and the Republican Party thinks they ought to be.
877-217-5757. Patrick in Ennis-Walda States, you took the cake today. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Good morning, Phil. You're on Talk Louisiana.
You know, good morning, gentlemen. I'm so glad there's a record of that because I was laughing my off because it was so hysterical what he was saying. He's such a nonsensical person. My question is this. If we're not going to have 75 as the cutoff age for the Supreme Court, then what other ways can happen for to rein them in? Because
all right, well, Biden, current President Biden, soon to be former president, he says there should be an 18-year term limit. That actually, I think, is a good idea, Mark. I like that idea, but whether it'll fly, I don't know.
I guess I'm more of a constitutional traditionalist, and the idea that Madison and the founding fathers came up with was basically to have a separate branch of government that is not beholden in any way to the other two branches of government. And I think the 18, this is my personal opinion, and I think that kind of goes against it. Now, having an ethics code, you know, which is what the President Biden also recommended, I think that's something that definitely we have seen, at least lately, is something that is very needed on that. And the number of justices on the Supreme Court is not in the Constitution. Perhaps there could be something done with that.
877-217-5757. Mark Ballard of the Advocate and Picayune at the ready, and we have another quarter hour to go. And when we return, Robin tells me Dwight in Washington Parish is first up. We'll return after this timeout with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Robin Dow producing. Mark Ballard is our guest, and we're talking about what's happening 96 days from now. And if you'd like to chime in on something happening in Louisiana, we do have some elections for Congress, of course. Public Service Commission race, the Supreme Court race. We've got a lot of local items on the ballot in Baton Rouge, a mayor's race. So we're at the ready for your questions. Dwight in Washington Parish has been waiting the longest, so Dwight, you have the floor. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. Well, here's my take on 96 days on what's going to happen. I think Trump is going to lose because his strategy of attack, whether it's looks, personality, or race, well, that could have worked with Joe Biden because he had something physically wrong with him and he was old. That is not going to work on a woman that's much smarter than him, 18 years younger, and has a plan. Trump has he has no plan for the future. And other than just rile up his right-wing base, he'll continue to do that, and that may bring money. But in the end, it's not going to bring him the votes. That's my take on that. Y'all, please comment on that. But also on what Jim said about the term limits, I like that idea too. Of course, I'm not a I'm not in position to know all the ins and outs, but the money that these guys get over long term, just like Clarence Thomas, that's a problem. And apparently, maybe they're not paid enough. You know, they need to be paid more, but just staying longer, just they get more money.
All right. Well, it's in Thomas's case, he got millions of dollars from a sugar daddy. So he's been paid well. I don't think any Supreme Court justice is destitute, but and it's a lifetime gig, a lifetime thing. And it's a case in which Republicans have they've gotten lucky. More justices have either died or retired during Republican administrations. And even when Roe v. Wade became the law of the land in 1973, seven of the nine justices who voted for that were Republican appointees. Actually, seven. It was 7-2, and I think six of the Republican appointees voted. There was 6-1 among the Republicans and 1-1 among the Democrats. Whizzer White, a Kennedy appointee, voted the other way. But Mark, the Supreme Court is a mess right now, and without confidence in the highest court in the land, we've got a real problem in our country.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can agree that it's a mess, but it certainly is more ideological than we have seen in quite some time. And a lot of the commentators are saying that it seems to be kind of adverse to what they have done in the past. And so, I mean, we can argue that, but it's also the Supreme Court also has gone back and forth over its history. I remember that what one of the main reasons it started the Civil War was the Roger B. Taney's decision on saying that black people had no rights that white people had to respect. I mean, that it has gone back and forth throughout the time. Plessy v. Ferguson in New Orleans, where people could sit on trains, was something that was decided in the 1880s, and then kind of overturned in the 1950s. And so the Supreme Court, like the rest of the country, tends to go up and down and make changes over time. And I think that we're in a time where the conservative majority is kind of, you know, imposing conservative views on the country. And I think that that'll change over time.
Trish in Grand Coteau. Trish, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I want to switch back to Donald Trump's performance last night at the convention. Who on his team or his handlers or advisors let him do that? Because his propensity for speaking his mind is not conducive to an audience of well-educated, erudite journalists.
Well, she makes a point.
I don't know. She makes a point, but I don't know. I mean, in the effort, the Trump campaign is trying to expand beyond its base and trying to draw in other voters. And to do that, you sometimes have to, you know, step up and go to places where you would not necessarily be welcomed. That would be a lot like seeing Democrats on Fox News. You know, you have to kind of go into places where you may not be welcomed. And I mean, from that point of view, it's sort of brave and also kind of standard in a campaign, because he's not going to be able to hide himself, particularly the way that he talks.
Well, and just to put it in perspective, Trump's remarks were not only incendiary, they were wrong. Vice President Harris has embraced her black and Asian identity. She attended Howard University, which is a historically black college, an institution that included her membership in the Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority, the nation's first sorority established for black college women. So I don't think in any way, shape, or form has she ever tried to shield her identity as a black woman. Now, her father is black, and her mother was Indian, so she is of both Asian and black heritage, and that's America. That's an America that
also
scares
first generation immigrant. So.
That is true. That is true. That's an America that scares the hell out of some people, though, Mark.
Yeah, I would say that I would say that's accurate. Many people kind of want to go back to the olden days, and are looking at a future that is much different than what they were brought up with.
Chuck in Spillman, Louisiana. Chuck, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mark. Mark, I got a quick question. What do you think of your old buddy Jake Grimes getting promoted to be the Louisiana State Climatologist?
By the way, Jay's last day was yesterday, I understand, on WAFB, and he worked with your beautiful bride, Donna, for many years. They shared many nights together before Donna came home to Olive Street and spent her evenings with Mark. But Jay did it well, didn't he?
He did. I had seen that he had been promoted to a state climatologist, and it seems to me, but I don't know, that he had been something similar back in the day before he joined WAFB.
That's
or maybe
correct.
It was climatologist adjacent or something like that. But that was one of the main selling points, I guess, on having him come to WAFB back, I don't know, 20 years ago? 30 years ago. Okay. Long time ago.
Mike in Villa Del Rey. Yeah. But go Jay. Mike in Villa Del Rey, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim and Mark. I thought it was really rich that a Trump supporter would come on radio and call someone else a member of a cult. But my question is the protests they had at Union Station, Mark, Trump seemed to be acquainted with J6. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. The protest that they had at Union Station was primarily aimed at Benjamin Netanyahu's speech that was going on at the same time in the U.S. Capitol, and it was basically arguing that the Israelis had gone too far and had killed too many Palestinian civilians in the war in Gaza right now, and that seems to be what they were doing. On that day, I got to tell you that there was no possible way that you would have a crowd get anywhere near the campus. They had blocked off, they had put up fencing all around the area around the U.S. Capitol, and there was multiple security screenings that you had to go through to get into the building. And once you got into the building, there were multiple screenings that you had to go through as well. That was what was happening. If I can jump in and change the subject for just a second, is that the Politico is reporting that a Republican pollster, and you know we really only care about the battleground states because we all know how Louisiana is going to vote. You know, in the same way that we all know how California is going to vote, and they're showing that that the vice president is ahead of Donald Trump, not by much, by just a couple of points, in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
Well, if that's the case, she will win the presidency.
And she's trailing in Arizona and Nevada.
She doesn't need those states if she gets those three, though. That's it. That's game, set, match. If she gets all three. And Hillary was 0 for 3.
If she gets all three and these numbers remain the same until November.
Well, and she also, a listener already has noted correctly, that she would have to carry everything else that Hillary did. And Hillary had close races in places like New Hampshire. So it's not a certainty, but it's a likelihood that But I do want to mention,
kind of show her excitement among the Democrats.
But a good news story today, Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich and American veteran Paul Whelan and others are expected to be released to the United States as part of a massive swap of political prisoners involving the U.S. and Russia. Hats off to Secretary of State Antony Blinken. That's a big one, and I can't believe that Putin would do this, but it appears that he has agreed to do it, and of course Russia will get something in return, but those are two people who've been in custody who should never have been so, and thanks for this development. Mark, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Talk next week. Back tomorrow. Stay safe and stay tuned.